Ganley. This is NHPR News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Earlier this summer, the Northern Pass Project unveiled a long-promised new route for getting Canadian hydropower down through New Hampshire and onto the New England grid. The broad scope of the proposal hasn't changed. It's still about 180 miles and still travels through many of the same towns. But the new path does try to avoid going through sensitive conservation lands in the North Country, a criticism of the first proposed route, and it includes burial of almost 8 miles of power lines. With this new map in hand, Northern Pass officials have also launched a new public relations campaign to counter what they feel is a misinformation campaign by project opponents. And so they've begun a series of community meetings, not just in the North Country, where resistance has been strongest, but also in cities and towns below the Great North Woods, the White Mountains, the Lakes region, even as far south as Concord. Still, while these communities haven't focused as much on this project, their residents are starting to express many of the same concerns long heard up north over the size and placement of transmission towers, their impact on views and property values, also whether we really need this energy and how green hydropower really is. Today in The Exchange, Northern Pass, the new route, the new effort, and the old questions that keep coming up. Let's hear from you this hour. Do you support this project or do you oppose it? Tell us why you think it is or is not a good fit for New Hampshire. Give us a call, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email us at exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page at NHPR Exchange. Our guests are Gary Long, president of the New Hampshire Renewable Energy Policy Development at Northeast Utilities, which of course includes a focus on Northern Pass. And Gary Long, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Yeah, nice to be here. Thank you.
Also with us, Charlie Jordan, editor of the Colebrook Chronicle, which has taken a position against the Northern Pass project and has done a ton of reporting on this issue. And Charlie, thanks for making the long trip down from the North Country.
No problem,
really appreciate it. Well, and gentlemen, I want to start real basic with you before we get into the many details on this. And to you first, Gary Long, opponents have questioned whether New Hampshire or New England even need this hydropower. Before we get into all the back and forth on this project, what do you think, Gary? Do we need this electricity?
Absolutely, it's needed. When this project was first thought about several years ago, it was in response to public policy in a couple different areas. One, of course, was the desire by the region to reduce carbon. The carbon footprint from electric generation was one of the policies that continues to be a very strong policy in New England. Another one was the increased use of renewable energy in New England, and of course it does that also. And then to have a more diversity of sources and fuel sources. And so those were the original reasons in addition to the economic benefits. Since that time, the need has simply grown and grown and grown. One example is the recent announced retirement of the Vermont Yankee plant. And the situation in New England, which continues to grow on the idea of being too dependent on a single fuel source, being natural gas, which is a fossil fuel source. And so the need in New England has been growing, and every one of those issues, whether it be reliability, early retirement of power plants, over-dependent on natural gas with shortages of transmission gas lines, all of those Northern Pass will help solve. So the need continues to grow, and I believe it will continue to grow in the future.
Let me ask you about natural gas real quick before I bring Charlie Jordan into this. You know, in the past couple of years, since this project was unveiled, natural gas has boomed, as you well know, Gary. It's gotten pretty cheap. It seems to be everywhere. It is a fossil fuel, but it releases less carbon than traditional fossil fuels. So does the natural gas entrance into our energy market make the need for hydropower less?
I think it's just the opposite. It makes it greater. Again, it is a carbon emitter. Supply is a real problem in today's local paper. It just announces an increase in a local utility's prices for natural gas to their consumers because of supply and demand and the increased demand has been placed by people who heat and use natural gas, in addition to the power plants who draw on the same pipelines to make electricity. So the pressures on natural gas supply versus demand are getting not quite but near a crisis stage, particularly in the winter. And so the fuel diversity issue is huge. We depend over 50%, about 57% on natural gas. With Vermont Yankee retiring, that will increase. And, you know, I think the question people need to ask themselves is, what's New England going to do to reduce carbon? What's New England going to do to become less dependent on natural gas? New England only uses oil for less than 1% of its energy, uses coal for less than 3%. So it's really all about natural gas and nuclear, but one of the nuclear plants is now closing.
Well, and there's so many aspects to talk about this hour with this, but let's tackle the energy aspect first. Charlie Dorden, okay, so opponents like yourself have often been asked, okay, you don't like hydro. Is a vote against Northern Pass a vote in favor of fossil fuels? What do you think?
I think everyone who really has paid attention to this issue out there among the opposition, they are well aware that there's a problem. And you know, Gary's correct. There are some needs to get away from fossil fuels. But what you have here is a classic case of unintended consequences, I think. I think when the final analysis is on this issue is we've got a decision to make, and it's whether to move forward in this direction or at what cost are we moving in that direction. And I think the people of the North Country really feel that they are guardians of what is New England and what is New Hampshire. You know, I use the analogy of the Weeks Act from 1911. Okay, here was a lumber somewhat recklessly being done in the White Mountains, and the U.S. government stepped in and said, hey, we're losing something here. And we enacted the Weeks Act. And I'll tell you, people complained about jobs then. You're going to kill the logging industry. But instead, today, we have this beautiful part of the country where tourists come. This is what we're weighing in the North Country is take a look at those calendars that Winston Pote took photos from. And that's what we're trying to preserve, that image of what is New Hampshire. It's the last, you know, it's the last unfettered area of our state. And so these are some of the important issues. I'm not arguing Gary's point. I'm just saying at what cost?
Well, yeah, and at what cost? I mean, as you well know, in the North Country, you know, temperatures are changing. People are concerned about climate change. Winters are getting shorter. Moose are dying because of the warm weather and the mm-hmm. ticks and so forth. So is this opposition to Northern Pass kind of setting aside the problem of climate change and saying, yeah, it's a problem, but we don't want to deal with it right now.
More houses in the North Country with solar panels. People are putting in windows and more cost-effective, ways of heating their homes. I think we have to go back to the drawing board. I think we've been in a spiraling situation of energy use for so long that we have to take a look. Just like they did, again, with lumber. We needed wood. We needed wood in the 19th and early 20th century. But we were also risking something that made New Hampshire what it was. And, again, think about the Sawyer prints and all the pictures that have been in New Hampshire profiles. This is the New Hampshire that I'm worried about when I go up to Quebec what's happening up there. So,
are you saying, Charlie, that if we conserved more, we might not need this project? Some have said, you know, if we focus more on conservation, we could eliminate the need to build X number of
I think, you know, New Hampshire, especially the North Country, is an independent lot. And I think that people will get on board with what they personally can do to address a problem as opposed to fix this for me. And I think there's many people that will mobilize behind let's get conservation, let's get better effective use. In the meantime, you know, Northern Pass is supplying a need that people want, or at least that's what they're saying, okay? Can you fault them for it? They're a company. But we have to ask ourselves, and especially people in the southern tier of New England, have to ask themselves, what are we doing here to make this the situation result like it is?
Well, that's an interesting point. And Gary, I wonder what you think. You know, instead of continuing to feed the beast of our appetite for energy, why not focus more on conservation? I think it was John Harrigan, the North Country columnist, said, you know, this is about people in Connecticut and southern New Hampshire being able to run their air conditioners at full blast. Why not think about it on the conservation end? Again, getting to this point, Gary, do we really need this?
Again, the answer is yes, absolutely. The issue of conservation and these, whether it be solar panels on roofs or wind or some of the fuel source, this is not new. I mean, these things have been talked about for decades. And the policy is what the policy is. The need is what the need is. On energy efficiency, I think if you talk to anybody, you will find universal support for energy efficiency. And that's throughout New England, throughout the country. You hear our president talk about it and wanting to do more. People may not realize that New England spends over $500 million a year in subsidized energy efficiency measures. So New England is going full bore on energy efficiency, has for years. And what I tell folks is if they stop there and you're thinking, I think you're making a real mistake, because you still have supply, you still use electricity, regardless of what the level is. And it's still, as I said, coming from those sources. New England has not grown in its use of electricity much. It has grown year over year, but not since the recession have we fully recovered. But nonetheless, we have retiring power plants. I think some people think that what we have will be there forever. It won't. We have over 2,000 megawatts of power plants announced for retirement just in the last couple of years. I think the question to ask is, how do you replace those when you're already doing $500 million of energy efficiency? I think people can talk about, well, I prefer to do this or that. But what we're seeing is, in New Hampshire particularly, very strong opposition to wind. Obviously, we're talking about some of the opposition to Northern Pass. Obviously, no one's going to build a new coal plant in New England. No one's going to build a new nuclear plant. We're very dependent on natural gas for a reason. It's because New England hasn't allowed anything else to be developed. And my focus is on renewables. Hydropower is renewable. And so we really have to do something to get off of this natural gas dependency. But New England does not have an answer to that right now. And energy efficiency is already happening, and it's not solving that problem, nor is it solving the problem of retirements of power plants.
I want to ask both of you about the green shade of hydropower, because there's been a lot of questions about that, too, how bright a green it really is, and also invite you to join us with your questions and comments. You can call in 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org or post a comment on the Exchange page at nhpr.org or on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. A lot more coming up in just a moment, so stay right with us.
This is NHPR 919. Good morning, and join us tonight at 9 for NHPR's live coverage of President Obama's address to the nation. President will be making his case for military action against Syria in response to its reported use of chemical weapons. Join us for in-depth coverage and analysis. Live coverage of President Obama's address to the nation tonight at 9 on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Comcast Business, partnering with businesses of any size to provide scalable technology solutions that keep pace with growth and success. More at business.comcast.com. From Upton and Hatfield, continuing a long tradition of serving the legal needs of people and communities of New Hampshire. Information at UptonHatfield.com. And Popolo and Bellows Falls, offering farm-to-table dining, movies and music, and presenting Samira Evans, John D. Graham, and Raiders of the Lost Ark. Information at popolomeanspeople.com. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking again at Northern Pass, a new route, a new public relations effort, and the many old concerns that keep coming up about this hydropower project. We invite you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Do you support this project? Do you oppose it? Tell us why. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on the Exchange page on our website or on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And gentlemen, before we go to our listeners, and we've got lots of comments in already, I did want to just talk about this big issue of whether hydropower is really green. And to you first, I think, Charlie Jordan, what do you think? How deep a shade of green would you assign a hydropower? Light green, dark green?
I think honest hydropower is fine. I think with the problem here, and we've all become in the North Country experts on this.
I mean,
it's kind of creepy, but what the Canadian government, you have to remember, Hydro-Québec is funded by the Canadian. I mean, it is not a private enterprise. They have really made waterways and done a lot of disruption of native lands and areas up there in a way that, you question how this is happening. And, you know, I know we're going to talk maybe a little bit about the towers too, but the end result is I think they've got this feeding frenzy going on in Quebec. I was up there just about 2 months ago. And the transformation, this is what I'm afraid of. There are corridors of towers and wires crisscrossing the eastern townships and all the way up to Quebec City. And it is, again, a feeding frenzy that is going on up there. They have a surplus. I've talked to Canadians who say they have to pay for this surplus. They're trying very hard to sell as much as they can. And that's why they have a willing buyer with PSNH and Northern Pass. They want to sell this stuff, but they're producing it at an incredible volume.
So how would you overall assess the environmental impact of hydropower?
Again, there's people that are far more knowledgeable than I am on that, but you know, methane gases and things are being released into the environment up there. There's an awful lot of study that has to be done. I mean, to have a small hydropower plant in New Hampshire, this is fine. I mean, this is what we've been doing, you know, tap into the Connecticut River, whatever. But now it's become, again, this industrialization of water power. And so you have to understand, again, what unintended consequence. They're feeding perhaps a need. We have a problem here because we are at the other end of that extension cord. There are things happening, and we have to look at that, not just where it's going, but the sources.
Yeah, let's talk about the source for a little bit, Gary, and then go to our listeners. Certain hydro projects, if lots of plants decompose in the process of creating that hydropower, those plants do release a lot of methane, said to be even a worse greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. So how dark a green can we color hydropower? What do you think?
It's a deep, dark green. I think there have been those studies, in fact, world-class, multi-year studies that have been done by Hydro-Québec that are available to the public. They're originally in French, so people didn't catch up to it right away. They were done way before people even talked about CO2 reduction. And they looked at methane and CO2, and they looked at before and after reservoirs were created and dams were created. And they're very, very extensive, and they have proven that it is as green gets. And I can't go in all detail as to what they say, but would invite people to look at those studies because they are publicly available. But, you know, when you think about water as a green source, you know, it comes from rain and then it flows into the oceans because of gravity. And fundamentally, what power engineers have done for years is tap into that flow, that gravity feed of water to make electricity. And then it's certainly renewed every time it rains. Every time, you know, water condenses and rains, it's a renewable source. I don't know anything that is more renewable. So I ask the question, if it's not renewable, what is?
On a small scale,
it is,
Gary,
as green. Yeah. The studies have shown it is as green as anything. Another, you know, wind is very green also, but not as reliable.
On a small scale, some people might agree with you. On a large scale, there are huge disruptions. Again, vegetation, fish, displacement. There are real questions about whether giant projects such as Hydro-Québec's are truly green.
Yeah, and that's what these studies address. Again, and they are multi-year, you know, highly scientific studies. So I really couldn't get into explaining it all to you, but I think certainly everyone would admit that any project has an impact, whether it be a wind project, even solar, although people don't think of it, the production of those solar cells are highly energy intensive and have an impact too if you look at the whole life cycle. And people do look, engineers and others, look at the whole life cycle of these. So yes, there is an impact, no doubt. But how does society get its energy? How will society get its energy? And there is nothing better, the studies have shown, than hydro.
Well, just real briefly about that, Charlie Jordan, you know, this issue of everything has an impact. You know, the infrastructure is a fact of modern life. We want power. We got to have infrastructure to go with it. The people of Seabrook have been looking at that nuclear plant for 3-4 decades. The people of Bow have looked at that coal-fired plant along the Merrimack River for a long time. What do you think, Charlie? Well, you know, at some point, you know, it's your turn. We need the infrastructure.
You know,
we need the energy.
I do agree with Gary in saying everything has an impact. And that's the bottom line here. We have to decide, is the impact worth it? He is stating an argument, and the opposition is stating an argument. Perhaps the people who best can decide right now, because there is great entrenchment on this on either side. I mean, there is entrenchment. The people who are in between that are undecided, that may be listening right now, they have to weigh both of these arguments. I would advise them before making a judgment on the North Country and saying, oh, those North Country people, why don't they just get on with this already? Come on up, visit us for a while. And if you do, why do you come up? Because you're seeing New Hampshire as you want it to be. We take that very serious in northern New Hampshire. It's a protection of an image. So that's the impact we have to weigh. We have to weigh at what cost again.
Well, and I appreciate your point about there is entrenchment on both sides, and I'd love to pick up on that mm-hmm. in a moment, but I want to share you with our audience. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. You can also post a comment on our Facebook page. And let's go first to Grafton. Lewis is waiting. Hi, Lewis. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
There's obviously both sides of this that are going to go on for quite a while. Coal is really difficult to beat in terms of price. I'd love to hear someone really take a look at some comments on that. But one of the quick questions I'd like to simply ask is if someone would comment on the cost of natural gas and propane. We actually have a lot of propane users in Vermont and New Hampshire, and I'd be interested if someone would just simply comment on the relationship between those two. Thank you very much.
What about Northern Pass, though, Lewis? That's what we're talking about today.
I understand. Northern Pass is an incredibly difficult issue, which I really think is going to be decided on a national level. I would really think that the president is actually going to make the final decision on this.
Wow. Okay. Thanks a lot, Lewis, for the call. And maybe, gentlemen, we could pick up on that second part first. As I understand, Gary Long, you do need federal approval for this.
Yes. It's called a presidential permit. It's under the overall jurisdiction of the Department of Energy. It's in the process of doing environmental impact studies. It's required because it's an international crossing. So any project, energy project, whatever, that anywhere in the United States that crosses it requires this what's called presidential permit. It's done many, many times throughout the country. There is a process for doing that.
The scopings are about to begin, aren't they?
DOE recently announced their scoping hearings, which will be public events for people to give their thoughts.
Wow. And did you want to jump in on that as well?
Actually the second time we've had a discussion with the new route that they're discussing now. But yeah, going across the border, coming in. And again, that brings up another issue, too. I mean, there are Quebecers who are against this, but there are also opposition that worry about this being another country. Again, we're reliant. We're looking for energy independence. And again, we're turning to even a friendly neighbor, but this is not, USA, at work here,
Lewis, thanks a lot for the call. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. As he mentions, the idea of crossing the Canadian border into the United States, crossings, and that issue has come up a lot in this project, as you both know. Here's an email that came in this morning from Jim, who says, Northern Pass needs a new permit from the White Mountain National Forest to cross the federal lands. To get the permit, Northern Pass needs to meet at least three exceptionally difficult legal tests. Jim says, we believe it's obvious they won't meet these tests, and so a permit should not be issued. That would normally be the end of the story, but hidden last week in the Federal Register was a notice on the new scoping meetings that you just mentioned, Charlie, is a reference that the U.S. Forest Service will now be evaluating a special one-off amendment that would waive the White Mountain National Forest protections to let Northern Pass through. Jim says, we think that's a travesty. We're sure many of your other listeners would, too. Again, for those who are not steeped in this, as Jim is and the two of you are, just remind us, I think, Charlie, the issue of the White Mountain National Forest and how Northern Pass would cut through that as well.
They're basically looking at going through the right of way. But, one of the things that came up recently, which I was unaware of, a woman named Susan Shibanoff brought to a Forest Society discussion that was held in Stark, is that when they're going to be coming down through the right of way with the new towers, okay? And because they only have so much space, they have to readjust the AC line, okay? You've got DC and AC. So
that's a type of electric current.
Right. So the AC line, which exists now, has to be removed and replaced with larger towers. I believe that's correct, isn't that right?
Yeah, to clarify, there's an existing transmission line that provides power to the North Country. that of New Hampshire that goes through the White Mountain Forest, and it's on an existing right-of-way. And that same right-of-way proposal would be used for the second line, which is a higher voltage line. So in order to minimize the height, which has been, you know, we've been listening to what people have been saying for the last two or three years and been redesigning based on what we hear and what we can do to minimize, you know, the impact and address the concerns. And so what Charlie's referring to is having two lines in the right-of-way rather than one. You may have, it may be parts where we have to rebuild the existing one. But the height determination is determined by the new line, not the existing line. So it's you know, if people are concerned about how high is the line, it's determined by the new line, not the old line.
So it is going to cut through the White Mountain National Forest,
yes,
on existing rights of way.
Exactly.
And higher than the existing towers
it'll be,
and power
it'll
lines?
Yes, it'll be higher, but to the minimum distance we can do safely to meet the national energy code. But yes, it's that higher voltage is 300,000 volts DC versus the 115,000 volts that's there now. So and the higher voltage needs a little bit higher height.
And to just emphasize, the AC existing line that's there now has to be replaced with a new structure. Is that correct?
In parts, yes.
Yeah. So there will be it'll be more than just one larger line in some areas. There'll be what you see now will also increase in height. Again, because of the restrictions that they have on width, how far they can go and what they're trying to put through that corridor. So it's going to be a little busy. And then, again, this is what I am starting to see up in Quebec more and more so. Once you get the right of way, you have to, every time you put more things in there, you have to change what's already in there. And so you've got
to accommodate.
Yeah, I think the thing on Quebec you need to keep in mind is certainly it's much more populated around Montreal than it is anywhere that we're talking about,
but
here
it is
in New Hampshire.
It is running through
and,
rural Quebec.
The other
though.
Thing, you know, it's as I said, it's much more populated. And the route, it's hilly. The route is there. And the new route was designed to be more remote, less visible. You know, if you think about the plains of, let's say, of New York near Niagara Falls or someplace where you can see the transmission lines, that's not the kind of terrain we're talking about in New Hampshire. It's much easier to basically hide and to have less visual impact when you have the rolling hills, the trees everywhere.
I wanted to ask about that, but I also want to let everybody know that as we talk more about this new route now, we're starting to get into some of the details of where it would go and concerns about that. We do have a map of that new route linked on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, if you want to take a peek at it. So, okay, White Mountain National Forest, Charlie Jordan, I know you're more North Country, but what are White Mountain National Forest tourism entities saying about the possible expansion growth of these power lines through the White Mountain National Forest? A huge, huge tourist draw for New Hampshire.
I mean, no matter where you are in the state of New Hampshire, we're a tourist state. I mean, whether you're on the seacoast, whether you're in the Monadnock area, this is a big part of what we do. I mean, you know, and I think that as we, again, hearkening back to the Weeks Act, we took this step, the country took this step to say this is where we're going to go in the future. And then 20 years ago, actually, we designated an area of the White Mountains, its own area, excuse me, the Great North Woods.
I remember that.
And all of this, I mean, that happened about 1998. We have lost logging. We've lost a lot of farming. And so we buy into it. We're tourists. We're tourism. But we're a different brand of tourism than the White Mountains. And so consequently, all of the area of that region up to the Quebec border relies heavily on tourism. And this is why we have this problem. So I'm hearing an awful lot. I do want to talk just very briefly when we have a moment about the business proposal that has come forward.
This is the jobs proposal.
The jobs thing, because yeah. I was at that, and it was an interesting event.
That was where, just backing up to let people know, that was where Public Service of New Hampshire said it would fund a job creation fund once the Northern Pass
million. Mm-hmm.
Money started coming through. The tourism issue, Gary, and then I do want to let our listeners jump back in as well, obviously. It's a big concern, especially in the North Country, for the White Mountains, for the whole state. What do you say to people like Charlie who say, look, this is going to ruin it. This is all we've got. You're going to ruin it.
Yeah, I think it's just the opposite. I think there's ways to enhance it if we work together as a community, as we've been advocating for a long time. And I think it's the way New Hampshire works is to work together. you know, I don't want to get into rhetorical arguments because there's some fears out there and people will feed on their fears. But I will tell you that existing transmission line that goes through the White Mountains, there's no evidence it's affected tourism in any adverse way for the last 40, 50 years. And there's lots of man-made structures around us every day that I think actually don't stop us from tourism or enjoying the outdoors, which we all do. They actually enhance it. One of the examples I use, and I'm hearing from folks up north, and we know it's very important, is ATVs and snowmobiles are a very big part of that tourism industry. And actually, a right-of-way enhances that and can actually advance the tourism. We have some land and some properties. We told people, let's look at ways that we can enhance tourism. I think there's ways to enhance tourism. I don't think it's going to decrease tourism.
Let's take some more calls and comments from our listeners. Thanks for all the emails and Facebook comments that are coming in. And Julia's waiting in Concord. Hi, Julia. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you.
Sure.
I would like to know what percentage of the energy actually is kind of be used in New Hampshire opposed to Massachusetts or other New England states.
Yeah,
I live along a road and I constantly see tractor-trailer trucks of trash and coming from Massachusetts into our backyard, and I would like to know what percent we're actually going to receive.
Yeah, Julie, this has been an issue. Gary, I'll turn to you briefly. This has been an issue. Some people have said, look, New Hampshire doesn't need this. It's just going to, you know, states, southern New England states. We don't really need this for us.
Yeah, and there's probably not enough time to explain the fundamentals of electricity, but we're all one grid in New England. We're all one market. What happens in Massachusetts, Connecticut, Vermont, Maine affects New Hampshire. If there's a plant closure in Vermont with Vermont Yankee, that definitely affects New Hampshire. So you have to get beyond thinking about political borders when you do that. So this, with respect to New Hampshire, you know, our intention is to complete a negotiations to have a part of that be in our energy portfolio to serve customers, you know, to help be directly associated with New Hampshire. The fact is, New England is one market, and what happens in other places of New England definitely impact New Hampshire. When I talk about natural gas dependency, that's a New England phenomenon that affects all of New England.
All right, Julia, thanks for the call. We'll take a lot more of your calls after a super short break, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Post a comment on the exchange page at nhpr.org or on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. We'll be back in just a minute, so stay with us.
This is NHPR 939. Good morning.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, healthcare exchanges, who will buy and why? Then, the science and lore of mushroom hunting, how exotic mushrooms make it from the field to our plates. All coming up on The Diane Rehm Show.
The Diane Rehm Show, this morning from 10 till noon on NHPR. Support for NHPR comes from UR members, and support also comes to us from Lewis Carno & Company Public Relations, supporting the Courier Museum's exhibit, Visual Dispatches from the Vietnam War. Information at courier.org. And from Home Healthcare Hospice and Community Services, presenting therapeutic music for family and professional caregivers, September 25th at 3 p.m. in Peterborough. Information at hcsservices.org. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on The Exchange, teenage drinking in New Hampshire, why our rates are much higher than elsewhere in the country. Find us on Facebook at NHPR Exchange to join the conversation ahead of the show. And join us tomorrow morning live at 9. Today in The Exchange, we are looking at the latest on the Northern Pass Project, a new route, a new public relations effort, and old questions that keep coming up about this project. Join us, 1-800-892-6477 with your questions or comments. Send a short email to exchange at nhpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange. And boy, lots of emails that are coming in, gentlemen, and I'd love to go back to them. Here's one from Dick, who says, recently traveling the lovely rural moors of England, I enjoyed breathtaking vistas. There was also the occasional high-tension power lines. They did not spoil my outing. Dick says, the warmth of my B&B and power from my laptop that night were worth it. Charlie Jordan, I'm going to throw that to you. What do you think? That this isn't, maybe it isn't necessarily the monster that some think it is.
Well, again, I mean, yes. I mean, I'll go home and I'll use my computer and I'll turn my lights on. I don't feel like, I mean, I remember the energy embargo of the early 70s when we were all at gas lines and things. I mean, show me that kind of picture and I'd say, okay, maybe I will give up my part of my marbles for this. But right now, I just don't see where we need the power to that level to tip that balance called New Hampshire a little bit too much to the, you know, over. We're okay. I don't want electricity to go away. Nobody does. I just am wondering, is it insatiable? You say feed the beast. Exactly. I'm afraid this is a moment now we have to sit and look at where we're going before we move forward because we have some great things in jeopardy.
Here's an email from Becky that came in earlier. She says there's a lot of discussion about wind these days, and wind turbines are upwards of 400 feet. Northern Pass proposes towers with an average height of 90 feet. Becky says, why are opponents supporting wind farms but not Northern Pass? The visual impact of 400-foot turbines on tops of mountains speaks for itself. Thanks, Becky, for that point. And Charlie, this gets into the bigger issue that we talked about right at the beginning of the show and that you just said again. You know, we've got all these choices and we're having to make some hard decisions.
I mean, we were watching very closely the wind argument right across the border in Vermont. I mean, that's been a big issue over there. And while all of the attention has gone, rightly so, I think, to Northern Pass. Suddenly, Route 26 out near the Balsams has these windmills. And I feel a little ashamed that we didn't focus more on it as a newspaper because those are really causing as much concern as the prospects of these towers. There are a lot of people that are very concerned about what they're seeing. We all thought this was going to be 33 windmills out in the middle of nowhere. Okay, out in the middle of nowhere. Is there such a place?
Well, yeah, everybody has a different definition of what that is.
When you're on Route 26 and you're going from Umbagog up to Colebrook and you're seeing this all over the place, they've got to turn to the locals and say, what is going on here?
Well, Becky, thanks for that email. And here's another one that came in from Jack Savage at the Forest Society, who has been a major opponent of this project. Jack raises a lot of points, and I won't go through all of them, but here's one that he raises, Gary Long, that has come up again and again and again. Jack says, around the contested topic surrounding Northern Pass is the potential burial of a line. Northern Pass has not said that it couldn't be done, but that rather that it would be too expensive. The fact is that they don't know how much it would cost, and they haven't looked at the cost of burying underneath transportation corridors. Saying it costs too much to underground is effectively saying New Hampshire's landscapes are not worth what it would cost. Jack says, I suspect the real answer here is that PSNH, Northeast Utilities, do not have an agreement with Hydro-Quebec to underground a line. They have an agreement to build one overhead at a limited cost. He says, PSNH, Northeast Utilities, have negotiated a very poor deal for New Hampshire, but not bad for Northeast Utilities if they can pull it off. Let's talk about burying the lines. This comes up every single time we talk about the Northern Pass. You folks in your new route have agreed to bury 8 lines, and a lot of people are asking, Gary, why not bury more?
Yeah, in a new route, which is obviously designed to have less of a visual impact, to be on properties that we have owned and acquired, or rights of way we've acquired. So it really is much more remote, much more out of sight. But, you know, obviously for a transmission line, unlike a building or something else that people would or even a wind turbine, we need a continuous line, you know, from the Canadian border to the grid. And so you can't have any breaks in the line. So obviously you have to find a continuous route, which, of course, the Forest Society has done everything they can to try to block the route unsuccessfully. So there's 8 miles of underground that were needed to complete the route. And we looked at it very hard. It was also in an area where people were very concerned about the visual impact, so it seemed to be a good mix of going underground to complete the route, to make that connection, that physical connection, but also in a way that had no real visual impact, and going along roads. So it's very, very expensive.
How much more expensive?
It's over $150 million more expensive. It's
to bury those just 8 miles?
Yes, you know, an overhead line costs about $3 million a mile underground, and underground is really geography dependent, terrain dependent. But it's $15 to $20 million per mile. So we added, with that and some other modifications, we've added $1.2 billion project became a $1.4 billion project. And we had to look very hard, and so did the Canadians, as to whether it could go forward with that kind of a price tag. And you know, all over the country, whenever there's a storm, whenever there's a major outages, everyone asks for underground. It's kind of like a simplistic view of how do you solve problems with wind or site. And study after study, including studies within the state, including studies by regulators, have always said it's far too expensive. So we keep saying it, but people don't want to believe it. If you had to underground a project, you wouldn't have a project. It's that simple. Because the project has to be paid for by somebody. I mean, you can't spend $1.4 billion without somebody paying for that. And the Hydro-Québec is the party that will be paying for it. And if it's not economic, it just doesn't happen.
When you guys decided, okay, we hear your concerns, we'll bury 8 miles, did you kind of open yourself up to greater questions about, hey, you can bury 8, why not 18, why not 180?
Yes, we fully anticipated, because when we looked at options, we fully anticipated that would be the reaction we get, is if 8 miles, why not 188 miles? And or if 8, why not 20 or some other number? And it really does comes down to underground is only used really where it's necessary physically, and because it is so expensive, and you know, it just there just isn't room in the economics. In other states where there's been some undergrounding, Connecticut is an example. The state of Connecticut consumers pay for it. But in this case, your consumers in New Hampshire aren't paying for anything on this line. So it's, you know, you can't just say, I want this underground and then have somebody else pay for it, because it just won't work.
I'm just question one thing about that, Gary. I mean, I think the last time I was on the program when Martin Murray was here, the statement was made that they absolutely would not bury any part of the line. It was just too cost prohibitive. And now they're burying 8 miles. My question is, yes, it does open the door. Do you, Gary, see, after the scoping, more burial possibly? Or is this the beginning and end of it?
And the scoping, by the way, is that Federal Department of Energy
process.
Right.
When people come forward and say, my problem with it is this.
Sure.
I can see it from my backyard type of thing.
You know, Charlie, I don't want to raise any false hopes, but obviously all input has to be taken into, and you know, there could be modifications before this process is all over, which is, you know, several months, years away from being getting to the actual permits. But I don't want to rule it out, but it is what, as I said, is it does it has to be a reason, and it has to be economically feasible, and that's been the challenge so far.
Let's take another call, and this is Ellen in Lancaster. Hi, Ellen. Go ahead. You're on the Exchange. Thanks for waiting.
Yes, hi, and thank you all so much, because this issue is really pertinent, I think, for all of us throughout the state, as well as folks throughout, you know, the country. There are issues like this going on all over about energy needs and where energy comes from. And
sure, it's part of the big picture, isn't it, Ellen?
Yes, it really, really is.
Sure, go ahead with your question.
Yeah, my biggest concern is about a loss of local control for folks throughout our state and in the local communities around this issue. And also I have concerns about loss of property values in the towns where the Northern Pass will come through, because most certainly it will blight some of these properties having the big towers coming through.
Ellen, can I ask you a quick question? You said loss of local control, and we'll talk about that with our guests for sure. But on the one hand, boy, local opponents in the North Country anyway have had an impressive impact. They've gotten the company to bury 8 miles. They've gotten state lawmakers to pass a law saying no use of eminent domain. They've gotten the attention of the entire New Hampshire congressional delegation. So in one sense, the locals have done a pretty good job controlling this this discussion.
I agree. I think that it's pretty awesome what's been happening. But I think on a statewide level also, it would really be nice to be able to get input from more people on this issue, because it does come down through pretty far south into the state as well. And I just believe that we need to have a voice as citizens as to where our energy comes from, how it comes through, and I'm concerned too about where the money ultimately is going. These are big, big corporations we're talking about with the utility company.
Well, and Ellen, I'm going to jump in here because we have just a couple minutes left, and you're raising a lot of important points. So let's go through them, and thanks for calling. First off, Gary Long, she talks about local input. From what I understand, meetings continue this week, next week. hearing from some of the other communities that our caller raises? Lancaster, Lincoln?
Absolutely critical in New Hampshire. I've lived in New Hampshire for 37 years. I've been passionate about New Hampshire and supporting New Hampshire and helping New Hampshire be economically better to help it in many ways. So obviously anybody who's lived in New Hampshire knows it's all about local. It's all about communities. It's all about people working with people. So I absolutely agree with that. I think where you come into an issue from a public policy, a public need, you know, you asked me at the beginning, what does this need it? And absolutely it's needed, is that you can't, though, in our society, say one person can stop a project or one organization can stop a project, an infrastructure project that's needed as something as vital as electricity. So I think for policymakers, you know, you want to listen and adapt and do whatever you can, and that's what PSNH is doing, the Northeast Utilities is doing, to try to – we're listening, we're changing, we're adapting, we're trying to satisfy those concerns. But we clearly will not satisfy everybody. So that person or persons or organization that's not satisfied, I think the question is, can they then stop the rest of the public and the rest of New England from getting a benefit? And that's, you know, a huge public policy issue. And for decades, for 100 years, the answer has always been, you know, you're serving the public. Our role is to serve the public. And even if not 100% of the public agrees. So it is a very active, a very interesting, it's we're putting a lot of time into just that.
I want to get to the property values issue, but go ahead, local control.
I mean, majority does rule, and Gary's right. But I think what you have to remember is the amount of people in the state of New Hampshire and the towns that have come out against this. And so can one company usurp the population, which is saying they don't want this? I mean, so if one person shouldn't be able to stop a corporation, should one corporation be able to stop a population?
So it works
both
ways.
And that's why we have this public review process. That's why everything that a public utility does is subject to approvals by the government. And that's why the government exists, is to make those decisions of how do we serve the public and how do we also consider the concerns of the public.
And here's a question that stems from what both of you are saying and what our caller raises. Thanks, Ellen, for the call. After Governor Lynch embraced this project, when it was first announced almost 3 years ago, he pulled back pretty quickly, as did many politicians. How do both of you feel, maybe you first, Charlie, about how our political leaders have approached this issue? They seem to want to say as little as possible.
Well, actually, I've been pretty proud of what I've been hearing from a lot of people, especially our local politicians up north.
State representatives, state senators.
Yeah, they're listening. And, I was concerned
Lynch,
about
Hassan,
Governor Lynch.
The delegation.
Yeah, in the beginning. And, and then he became kind of a lame duck situation. So we've been watching very closely Governor Hassan and how she feels about this. But there have been, regardless of party lines, there have been real questions. And that's the remarkable thing about this subject is there are no party lines on this subject. People are coming out for or against on either side of the political spectrum together. And so but I do feel the questions are being asked, and it starts because our local legislators have been bringing the question up, and we have had some real inroads in Concord because of that.
What do you think about Ellen's point? She's worried about a loss of local control, and then I asked her, hey, in this instance, the locals seem to be doing a pretty good job of making sure the officials are on top of it.
Not to discount that, I tend to agree with what you're saying there. I think that the public is weighing in. This is grassroots at its best, you know. And I think Northern Pass is relying on that too. They also want to hear what the public is saying. So, in the end, it's an argument that you just got to make a decision where you fall down on.
You know, as you mentioned the words grassroots, and that's something I wanted to ask you, Gary. Again, the grassroots effort against this project has been impressive. Why has there not been a grassroots pro-Northern Pass effort? You know, people coming to meetings and, you know, having bumper stickers and waving signs and so forth. You don't see that.
There actually is. But, I think we know in this society if you're against something, you're usually more passionate or vocal about it than if you're for something, you know, and you just rely on the system to provide for it. But, as far as, it's a fascinating subject, the idea of how do we take care of our energy needs at the same time, you know, try to satisfy everybody? I think it's really manifesting itself in New Hampshire in the wind development, where there was a wind development in New Hampshire that the state accepted, and now there's a real question is do we want it or not? And it really begs the question of what kind of an energy future do you want? You know, and I'm so close to it. I know that the numbers are really getting more and more risky or getting more and more dangerous for consumers. The problem, of course, is they don't see it today. And so how do you plan for the future? And really that's one reason why I'm so passionate about this and why I'm working on it is because I feel we really do need things like this in our future. I really don't think that we can continue to depend on fracking and transportation of gas from other places and be very dependent on one fuel. I just think we have a real problem in New England.
Well, and I have an email to that effect, a couple emails to that effect, kind of asking questions about how this fits into the bigger picture. I'll have to set that aside for another day. But in terms of the Northern Pass Project, gentlemen, I think you first, Gary Long. So real quickly, what's next in this next round of community meetings? You've got the Federal Department of Energy, lots of moving parts that are happening very quickly.
So this project has been going on for 4 or 5 years. We'll go on for another 4 or 5 years. I try to remind people that we still haven't made an application with the state of New Hampshire, which is obviously a very important step. And so it continued, and that's because we're listening to people and we're modifying, we're continuing to working with people, and we're going to continue to do that for the months ahead until we do make that filing with the state.
Okay. Charlie Jordan, your hopes for the next couple months?
Well,
a lot going on.
Wherever you are in New Hampshire, this is your story. I mean, do not ignore this and learn as much as you can. Read both sides and weigh in on this and then decide what's important to you.
All right. I want to thank everybody who emailed, posted comments, called in today. And I want to thank both of you very much for coming here. Gary Long, thank you for your time.
Yeah,
I appreciate
thank you.
It. Gary Long, president of New Hampshire Renewable Energy Policy Development at Northeast Utilities. Charlie Jordan, thank you again
Thanks.
For being here. Charlie Jordan, editor of the Colebrook Chronicle, which has taken a position against the Northern Pass Project and has done a lot of reporting on this issue. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our producers are Ellen Grimm and Faith Meixel. Our volunteers are Priscilla Malcolm and John Barrett. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange executive producer is Keith Shields, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed any part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org.
I'm Laura Kanoy, and tomorrow on The Exchange, teen drinking in New Hampshire. Despite our reputation as one of the healthiest states, young people here abuse alcohol at greater rates than the rest of the country. With this comes other risky behaviors, from drunk driving to assault, and a greater chance of addiction down the road. We'll look at how the state's communities have been tackling this issue. Email us at nhpr.org and join us for The Exchange, tomorrow morning live at 9 and again at 8 p.m. here on NHPR.
The Diane Rehm Show, next at 10 on NHPR, where support comes from you, our members, and from Hinckley Allen, attorneys at law who believe a lawyer should also understand your business. More information about Hinckley Allen and the clients they serve is online at hinckleyallen.com. And Brattleboro Retreat, helping people find the strength to overcome mental health and addiction challenges since 1834. Learn more at brattlebororetreat.org.
These are the stations of New Hampshire Public Radio.
WEVO Concord 89.1, WEVS Nashua 88.3, WEVH Hanover 91.3, WEVN Keene 90.7,
WEVC Gorham 107.1,
WEVJ Jackson 99.5,
WEVF Colebrook 90.3,
and WEVQ Littleton 91.9,
and online at nhpr.org.
Good morning. It is 10 o'clock.
From WAMU and NPR in Washington, I'm Tom Gelton of NPR, sitting in for Diane Rehm. 3 weeks from today, Americans who don't have health insurance through their employer will be able to buy it through state exchanges. Exchanges are a key part of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. The idea was that these exchanges would give uninsured people a way to obtain coverage.
Federal subsidies would make insurance affordable.